This public radio podcast is supported by Constellation Energy, a global provider of fuels, power, and energy services, committed to environmentally sound, energy efficient, and sustainable energy solutions. Constellation Energy, the way energy works. And by Society for Human Resource Management, HR, leading people, leading organizations, shrm.org. Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments. Today, Putnam manages money for more than 9 million individual and institutional investors worldwide. Putnam Investments, a prudent approach to investing. Produced in association with the University of Southern California.
We were trying to get a cab to the studios this afternoon, but we were running a little bit late and our timing was terrible, right at evening prayer in downtown Dubai. So empty cabs went whizzing by on their way to the mosques. Islam and business in the new Middle East today on the program from American Public Media and live from Dubai. This is Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by the American Public Transportation Association, working to help reduce greenhouse gases with 10 billion transit trips per year at publictransportation.org. Conversations from the Corner Office, Dialogues with Top CEOs, is supported by Society for Human Resource Management, online at shrm.org.
Greetings once again from Dubai in the United Arab Emirates. I am Kai Rizdal. Today is Wednesday, the 12th of March. At this point in the week, you might fairly be wondering exactly how Dubai has managed to generate all the growth it has, because it's not like it's a cheap proposition for companies to come and set up shop over here. Oil is the easy answer, of course, but if you want to earn some extra credit, try this. Free zones. They've got a fistful of them, and the competitive advantages are pretty clear.
For example, 100% ownership of the business. If you go outside the free zone, then you would require a partner to establish the business. We have 50 years guarantee tax-free.
Dr. Amina Al-Rustamani runs one of the biggest free zones here, Dubai Media City. As with just about everything else, Media City is a conscious effort to turn Dubai into a regional and then a global hub. Anybody care to guess how it's working out?
Oh, my God. We have the big names, BBC, CNN, Leo Burnett, Starcom, OMD, NBC.
That last one, NBC, is the one we're interested in today, the Middle East Broadcasting Company. NBC runs the Al Arabiya News Channel, a competitor to Al Jazeera, as well as six other entertainment feeds. It airs a good deal of American content, too. You can watch Oprah over here, if you're so inclined. NBC is run by a member of the Saudi royal family, Sheikh Waleed bin Ibrahim. For this month's Conversation from the Corner Office, I met the Sheikh at his office in Media City, and I asked him why he started NBC in the first place.
I think it was a bit primitive. We went to school in America in the early 80s, and we realized that we didn't really have television. You know, we had propaganda media machines for government. It doesn't rise to become commercial televisions the need was obvious.
You started this company in London, spent 10 years there. Now you are here in Dubai. Why Dubai?
The credit is to them, not to us, because they did a pretty good job in convincing us to move. And I'm really glad that we came.
What was the sales pitch to you for Dubai when you sat down with the Sheikh?
Freedom of speech, because that's the only thing that made us go to London in the first place. And he went through tests that I know about during the Iraq war, even from the Americans. Rumsfeld was not happy with Al Arabiya at some times, and they tried to put pressure on Sheikh Mohammed. He said, look, if you can shut your TV stations in the U.S., I can shut these guys down. I put them in a free zone, Media City, and I'm not going to change it.
Do you think that this company has a role in trying to make people understand the region a little bit better?
Oh, yeah. The real message is for these people to understand each other first and then reflect that on the outside world. I'm Saudi, but I'm also an Arab Muslim in the Middle East. who is looking for change, like many people in my generation who are looking to see this part of the world evolving to become modern, become fit for our children to live in. Everyone tried from his side, and I happen to be in the media.
Have you ever had, with El Arabiya or any of your other channels and networks, religious or political problems with a government in this region?
Every day.
Every day?
Yeah. Yeah. They understand us and we understand them. So we really have mastered, I think, by now, how we deal with them on that. It's normal. I think everybody deals with it. All media in the world have some kind of problems with some either governments or lobbyists. You have your share there everywhere.
You've established a pretty powerful brand here in this company, and I'm wondering if you have ambition in the wider world of entertainment in the Middle East. Movies, a music label, what's on your mind?
The way we are expanding today, believe me, it's becoming even more than what I plan myself. I think my role now is fading. It's not anymore the one-man show that was in the early 90s when we can only see less than a meter in front of us. You know, I think today, if there's anything I accomplished, is to have a system in place, and whether I'm there or not, what you see now is there forever. It's not anymore about me.
So are you looking for something else to do?
Maybe an early retirement. I would love that, you know, spend some time with my children, I think, yeah.
Sheikh Waleed Ali Rahim is the CEO of MBC. Excellency, thank you.
Thank you very much.
As open-minded as Sheikh Waleed might seem to be, his networks have to be a little bit more conservative because a good part of the audience is Muslim. And in some countries, Saudi Arabia in particular, very conservatively Muslim. Under Islamic law in Saudi Arabia, unrelated men and women can't mix in public. They can't go to school together. They can't work together in an office. Courtship and marriages are traditionally arranged. But young Saudis are starting to resist, and technology is helping them bend those rules. From Riyadh, Kelly McEvers explains.
In the U.S., Bluetooth is this kind of nerdy way to talk on your phone while you're pacing around the airport. In Saudi Arabia, it's how you cruise guys. The first thing you do is give yourself a handle.
We are sitting in the back seat of the car. I'm with my friend, whose Bluetooth name right now is...
Oh, in Arabic?
Yeah.
Hello, Fadia. It means I'm pretty in looking.
Pretty in looking, I'm in the white Lexus, desperate for your love. With Bluetooth, any phone within a 10 or 15 mile radius can see your handle, network with you, and send you something.
The more popular phones now are the ones that signal a Bluetooth message.
This is still a traditional place, though, so a girl normally won't send a photo or video of herself by Bluetooth. Instead, it's all about checking each other out and using Bluetooth to exchange phone numbers.
We have interest.
The place to be is Tahlia Street in the newer part of Riyadh. Women aren't allowed to drive in Saudi Arabia, so girls pack themselves in the back seats of cars, hidden behind tinted windows and protected by Indian or Pakistani drivers. The dudes hang out at tables outside Starbucks or Chili's.
And then they're just trying to see who comes, who goes, who's interested, who's not.
The girls definitely run the show. Our heads, faces, and bodies are covered in black. But if we stop our car and stare at a guy long enough, he'll jump into his car and follow. At a stoplight, he waves his phone and smiles.
Just asking you, do you want the number?
Wow.
He has his Bluetooth on.
He's holding up his... Yeah, he just held up his phone.
See, you want it? My number? That's how it goes. You want my number? Turn it on.
But he turned it on.
Oh. See, he just sent... Probably him. Bluetooth. If I say yes, yes, view, that's his number.
Pretty in Looking decides this guy is too young for us. If she does end up finding someone old enough and cute enough, she'll call him and get to know him. After that...
The next step would be arranging a place to meet.
That's Raid Kusti. He writes for a liberal English-language newspaper. He says meeting in person is tricky. That's because malls, restaurants, and cafes here are segregated into two sections. The family section, for women and children and husbands, and the bachelor section, for single men. So a guy and a girl on a date have to pretend they're married just so they can sit together.
And, Kusti says, they have to watch out for officials with long beards and flowing robes, known around here as Mutawa, or the Committee to Prevent Vice and Promote Virtue.
Once I was sitting with a friend at Starbucks, there was a guy and a girl who were dragged out from the family section by the vice cops. They didn't have identification to prove that the lady is the man's spouse, and they were busted.
The couple was hauled away in an SUV, and then...
The girl is humiliated. The vice cops would contact her parents. For the guy, it's a bit more difficult.
He could spend a night in jail, get searched and interrogated, even beaten. So a lot of times, guys and girls just decide not to meet, to get to know each other online. That's actually okay under Islamic law, says Salman Al-Awda, a well-known preacher and religious scholar.
If the matters they are discussing are economic, political, social, what have you, then there's no problem with people discussing those issues, as men and women on the internet.
Al-Awda once was a spiritual mentor to Osama bin Laden. Now he runs a hugely popular website, Islam Today. He says to keep conversations from getting romantic, young men and women should police themselves. Both conservatives and liberals here agree it's impossible for the government to regulate behavior online and on the phone. In fact, people here say it's technologies like chatting and Bluetooth that eventually will lead to the opening of this traditional society. But the ride won't be totally smooth.
Okay.
Out on the strip again, a new group of Saudi girls teaches me to chair dance, Arab style, in the back seat.
Yeah, we do like this, then you do like this.
They flirted with some guys on Bluetooth, but they haven't given out their phone numbers yet. A pack of cars is following us through slow-moving traffic. So far, we haven't seen any vice cops.
Whoa!
Whoa!
We want to open the car.
Pretty soon, though, it gets ugly. A guy jumps out of his car and tries to break into ours. This could get everyone into huge trouble. The girls say all this segregation has made guys crazy. So now that guys have a chance to meet girls with Bluetooth, they take it too far. Eventually, the guys speed away, and the girls go back to their lattes. Legal experts here say with every new technology, young Saudis will find ways to get around the law. Like my friends here keep telling me, you just can't control human nature.
This is old. You see that car? Oh, the car?
In Riyadh, Saudi Arabia, I'm Kelly McEvers for Marketplace.
Long before oil transformed the economy in the Middle East and big business transformed Dubai, Muslim traditions defined almost every aspect of life here. And not just religious customs. Islam frowns on wasting natural resources. It's a nod to the tribal days when survival depended on it. Today, some Middle Eastern businesses are reaching back to those green Islamic roots to get an edge on the global competition. From the Marketplace Sustainability Desk, Sam Eaton reports.
This is the sound of modern Dubai. Family outings at the plush Mall of the Emirates, a jumble of well-known calling cards, Gucci, Versace, Starbucks, a Virgin megastore. It could be anywhere, really, but keep listening. That's the evening call to prayer echoing through 6.5 million square feet of retail space. Several decades ago, Dubai was nothing but a sun-baked fishing village. Now, it's one of the fastest-growing economies in the world, with an annual growth rate of nearly 17%. Dubai business leader Michel Kanu.
With the flow of wealth into this region, it's like taking a teenage boy, it's introducing him to the concept of girls. When he first gets into it, his hormones are driving him nuts.
Kanu says those financial hormones and this unbridled consumption violate key Islamic principles like the careful balance between man and nature and the sustainable use of land, forests, and water.
If you applied the teachings of the Quran, it would fail because we have failed to fulfill what is required of us. For example, the concept of throwing away plastic that doesn't degrade for 100 years, wastage is not acceptable.
Tough words for a place that produces more waste per capita than any other nation on the planet, more than 5 times the global average. Many Middle Eastern businesses are trying to shake that wasteful image as they contemplate a post-oil future. Dubai is expected to run out of oil in the next few decades. Abu Dhabi, its prosperous neighbor down the coast, has at least another 100 years of reserves. But that's not stopping Abu Dhabi from investing $22 billion in green housing, businesses, and transportation. Its goal is to build an emirate as green as Dubai is flashy.
An enhanced oil recovery, or EOR, technology.
Abu Dhabi recently hosted the world's largest renewable energy summit in its sprawling exposition center. All ideas were welcome. Consider the ancient palm date. Dubai entrepreneur Brahim Zaitouni hopes to use the region's 2 million-ton surplus of this popular Middle Eastern snack to make everything from biofuels to eco-building products.
So from a date, from the beginning, we have used all its components, and we do not waste anything.
Entrepreneurs like Zaitouni show that not only is the Arab world adapting to the modern economy, it's defining it on its own terms. Maryam Al-Fouderi with Kuwaiti logistics giant Agility says that's where Middle Eastern companies stand to gain.
Think about it. This is one of the hottest inhabited regions in the world. And yet people lived here not only in days before electricity, but in days when people were dirt poor. I mean, literally had nothing.
Al-Fouderi says Middle Eastern development has so far mimicked the West's wasteful and environmentally damaging practices. But unlike the West, sustainable lifestyles here are only a generation removed.
There's still memory, individual memory of what it was like in the time before oil. There's still that link to a not so distant past.
And not so far away, really. Bedouin camel farmers still live among the sand dunes east of Dubai City, where they keep ancient traditions alive. Mohammed Al-Shamsi is one of them. He says the modern economy has brought generators, Toyota Land Cruisers, a house in the city. But his heart is here among his camels and his favorite hunting falcon. Why do you still have a falcon?
It's my traditional. I like it. This is still with me, the falcons.
Excuse me!
A four-wheeler sprays us with sand as it tears past. This favorite tourist activity, called dune bashing, carves miles of tracks in the orange sand. It's an uncomfortably close brush between the ancient Middle East and the modern West, and one that hints of the deep challenges still ahead as the Arab world makes its way in the global economy. In Dubai, I'm Sam Eaton for Marketplace.
We've got a slideshow to go with Sam's story. It's online at marketplace.org. Coming up, Sharia-inspired hospitality.
There is absolutely no reason for us to hide our visions, our concept, and our values.
But first, let's do the numbers. What do you want first, the bad news or the bad news? Crude oil touched another record high today, $110.20. That is due in part to the declining dollar. It fell to new lows against the euro. The average price for a gallon of gas right now is about 3.25. Yes, another record. And it is only going to go up. Analysts predict a sizzling $4 by summertime. Here in Dubai, it's a practically cheap $1.50, which kind of figures. About two-thirds of the world's oil reserves are in the Middle East. 40% of GDP here in the UAE comes from oil and gas. This country produces about 2.5 million barrels of crude a day. It consumes about 372,000 barrels. And you are listening to Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Vanguard, offering investments designed to help individuals, institutions, and advisors reach their long-term financial goals. 888-VANGUARD. Middle East reporting on Marketplace is supported by Constellation Energy, global provider of fuels, power, and energy services. Committed to sound, efficient, sustainable energy solutions. Constellation.com. And by Cleveland Clinic, expanding globally and committed every day to providing innovative treatments and hope to patients worldwide. Online at clevelandclinic.org. Each song we choose for the rundown is there for a reason. You can find out all about the songs and musicians appearing in our special series from the Middle East. Head to marketplace.org and check out the Middle East at Work section. There you'll find a music link.
here in the States, we take going to the movies for granted. Popcorn, previews, cell phones ringing in the house. But if you're in Saudi Arabia, you've got to get your entertainment elsewhere. Commercial theaters are against the law in the kingdom. For home viewing, video stores rent flicks with the kissing scenes cut out. But like a Hollywood script, there may be a happy ending to the ban on public cinema. A government-sponsored film fest is planned for May. They'll screen regional films and even give out awards. I'm Michelle Phillippe.
This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdal. We are live from Dubai this week in the United Arab Emirates. A guy I was out to dinner with the other night ordered a beer when we sat down. Didn't quite work out. I think he wound up with sparkling water. Sharia, or Islamic law, shows up in a lot of different businesses in this region, including hospitality. The Al Mulla Group, based here in Dubai, announced a Sharia-compliant hotel portfolio not too long ago. Alcohol-free. The food will be halal, that is, prepared in accordance with Islamic laws, and they'll have different wait staffs for men and for women. Somewhat less strict, but still Islamic-friendly hotels are popping up all over the Middle East, including here in somewhat less strict Dubai. We sent Marketplace's Sean Cole to check them out.
I went to the new Copthorne the day it opened. It's a four-star hotel not far from the airport. Manish Singh, the assistant sales and marketing director, showed me around.
King-size bed, overlooks to the creek with a little balcony.
163 rooms and suites, running anywhere from $400 to $1,000 a night, including taxes. No minibar. This Copthorne is owned by the Abu Dhabi Islamic Bank, so it's a dry hotel. Also, there are different swimming times for men and women.
From 7 till 2 is for ladies, and from 2 to 7 in the evening is for the men.
But apart from that, you wouldn't know it's Sharia compliant. In fact, Singh didn't want to talk about it being Sharia compliant. At all.
We just want to show everybody we are a hotel. We don't want them to buy us because we are Sharia and not to buy us without we are Sharia.
Would it not, though, be a great selling point?
We don't want to be stereotyped. We want to be open for all.
The thing is that Dubai has really tailored itself for all comers. It's a place you can let your hair down. So a Sharia-compliant hotel here is news. But a lot of them are in the works, including a whole Islamic-friendly brand called Tamani. The first one just opened in Dubai Marina. Five others are planned for Dubai alone. 2,200 rooms in a hospitality market that's famished for them. And lucky for me, Tamani didn't mind talking about Sharia one bit.
There is absolutely no reason for us to hide our visions, our concept, and our values.
Alain Guerny is French, if you haven't figured that out. He's also the CEO of Tamani Hotels and Resorts.
We are also holder of a very large Islamic fund. Therefore, if we raise money between the Islamic community, we cannot start opening nightclubs and discos and everything else. The two are not necessarily compatible.
But having said that,
I think people are making far too much out of that alcohol things.
For one thing, Guerny says, you can buy booze at duty-free and drink it in your room. And that's true at all these places. For another, he says, people should focus on what a hotel does provide. He gave the example of the Taj Palace Hotel, which has been in Dubai for about 7 years.
It's a Sharia hotel. It's an excellent hotel. I've stayed there 25 times. Excellent hotels. No bar? So? You go to the lobby, you look. Do you think they are all Arabic? They are not.
But a lot of them were the day I went. Or at least there were a lot of women draped in black abayas, covering everything, including their faces in some cases. And one of the guests made a point of this in explaining why he liked it there. His name's Shams Kanani, a self-described international businessman originally from Kenya.
Dubai has now unfortunately become a center for illicit business. But when you come here, you will see that you will not find any of those type of women around. And we feel at home that it is like a family hotel.
Kanani was actually the first ever guest of the Taj Palace Hotel in Dubai. He came running when he heard it was going to be Sharia compliant. He also says that his company is involved with hotel management and that he sees a lot of opportunity in the West for hotels that make Muslims feel at home. In Dubai, I'm Sean Cole for Marketplace.
The United Arab Emirates is an Islamic country. Sometimes it's hard to tell, though, especially here in Dubai, which is a surprise for some Muslims who come here. Marketplace's Amy Scott reports.
Every Monday night, a group of women and a few men gathers in this opulent home near the largest mall in the Middle East. They leave their shoes by the door. Most of the women cover their heads. They sit on pillows in a circle. Summer Han moved to Dubai from Los Angeles with her husband and three daughters. He made it big in real estate here, but she found the spiritual life lacking.
In the States, there's a Sunday school, Islamic Sunday school, so we would send our kids on the weekends to learn about the religion, but here there's no such school.
So she hosts this weekly religious lesson in her home. This evening, Sheikh Walid Mossad begins with a prayer. Like most of his students, he's an expat who came here for his job. He grew up in New Jersey.
A lot of people come to Dubai, or even the UAE in general, thinking that they're going to get more of a Muslim lifestyle than they would in Europe or in the U.S. There are mosques scattered across the city, but for the most part, you don't really feel like you're in a traditional Muslim city like Cairo or Damascus.
Living here presents other challenges for Muslims. The Sheikh's lecture this evening is dotted with references to excess, like the guy who just paid $14 million for license plate number one in Abu Dhabi.
Why would someone pay that amount of much money? Think about it. Why would they do that? It's a number, it's a plate, it's a piece of plastic or metal. They're buying uniqueness, prestige.
The students come here from Australia and the UK. One is a lawyer from New York who works in Islamic finance. But it's not all expats in the group. Yusria El Amri is a rare Emirati in this country of outsiders. She says she feels almost a sense of duty to share her perspective with others.
We have to be ambassadors, you know. So how I act or how I wear, for example, how I speak with others, this means Islam.
For El Amri, that means wearing the national dress, a black abaya that covers all but her face. But when the lesson ends, many of the others remove their head coverings as they go back into the night. In Dubai, I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, celebrating 70 years of service to financial advisors, their clients, and institutions worldwide. Details at Putnam.com. Additional support from the University of Southern California's Marshall School of Business.
If you had to pick an icon for this country, falcons would be a pretty good choice. They're on the postage stamps, they're on the currency, there are statues of them in traffic circles. They've even got their own hospital funded by a member of the royal family, complete with x-ray machines, a lab, and a surgery. That's Tarquan. He's in for a follow-up exam.
He cannot hear one side, but we don't know what's wrong with him. Now we fix him. It's okay.
Bedouins used to use falcons to hunt for food. Now they're more for recreation because the birds can be pricey, $15,000 or more. Dr. Tom Bailey is a falcon vet. The
hospital's been in existence since 1983. Anyone can bring a raptor here, and we will give free treatment.
But like a lot of things in Dubai, the market has become more competitive, so private hospitals are moving in. Falcon physicals, by the way, about $200. You can check out the video on our website. It's marketplace.org. That is Marketplace from American Public Media. Today, the Dow lost 46 points, 0.3%. Ravi Karman, Stephen Colon, Nicole Imbornoni, Eric Johnson, Jeff Peters, Aaron Scott, and Phil Stearns engineer the program for us. Coming up next time, Harvard's high expectations in the Middle East.
To improve the standing of the United States internationally.
Well, that's very grand.
No, I think it's incumbent on all of us.
I'm Kai Rizdal. Hope you can join us for that tomorrow.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.